Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Penny Eiler, a member of the program committee. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors and guests and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, or by our minister, Sandy Ingham. Today, Madeline Parra will present on global warming. This morning, Madeline Parra was born and raised in Chicago. A Madison resident for over 30 years, she currently lives, as Dirk mentioned, Arboretum co-housing with her partner. She teaches four-year-old kindergarten at Cesar Chavez Elementary. In the middle of the Walker protest, she founded the Madison chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby and has since helped five other Wisconsin chapters to get started. Madeline was among those arrested in D.C. for protesting the Keystone Pipeline and helped found the Madison chapter of the 350.org. And I'd like you to welcome Madeline.
I wanted first just to say thank you. I've loved being here. Normally on Sunday morning, I'm over at Queen of Peace, and it really that part where the wife wanted to be the Pope.
Oh.
I don't know if I approve of the rest of her ambitions, but that one I really loved. And thank you to Peter and to all the people who made this happen. So how did I end up here? Let me start there. 3 years ago at Christmas, and I'll come back to why that's, well, I'll just say why that's there. Those are my buddies. The title says, God speaks to me in bookstores and how I came to love the carbon tax, but really it's those people that I've come to love among many others because they're my comrades in doing effective things about climate change. Okay, but 3 years ago, I wasn't in that place. I went home for Christmas to my mother's house, and you know how it is. My mother has always been the cook, but she's getting older, so I'm the daughter. You know, you spend a lot of time in the kitchen. But when I finally got out of the kitchen and got in the living room, on her coffee table was this book. And you can go to the next slide, because then you can see the book. It was James Hansen's book, Storms with My Grandchildren. And I picked it up because I'd been thinking about climate change. I'd been thinking about what can I do about my own carbon footprint? Could I put solar on my roof? I'd been worrying about it. But until I read that book, I didn't get galvanized into that point of decision, that point of commitment that's talked about in the quote, which I love from that once you're committed, all kinds of things open up. So I started reading that book and I couldn't put it down. It made me a little antisocial there at Christmas. But what James Hansen did was confirm my sense of urgency about climate change and global warming. And that's the God speaks to me. Really, actually my mother, that quote comes from her. She literally says, God speaks to me in bookstores. So God spoke to my mother, and the book landed there, and apparently God spoke to me through my mother, because it truly changed my life, finding that book and reading it. It wasn't an easy read, but it was worthwhile. And on the way home in the car, my husband and I were talking, and we kind of looking at each other, going, well, if this is the situation, if we are risking life on Earth by proceeding with our normal lives the way we normally do, if that's the risk, we can't just go on as if that's not happening. We made a decision, actually, both of us, at that point that we couldn't do business as usual in our own lives. And I'm a teacher. It was the beginning of winter vacation. I got on the internet. James Hansen had his suggestions for what you should be doing, and I was like, okay, he knows more about this than me. He's been doing it for 30 years, so I will follow his suggestions. One of which was this idea of a carbon tax, which I'll come back to towards the end a little bit. And so it's been a wonderful 3-year journey where unforeseen things and unexpected things have happened, and I found myself doing things I didn't think I could do. And that's kind of the joy of it. I mean, climate change is grim, right? But when you find something that you're passionate about and find people to connect with on it, and you can set your action and your relationships against your fear and worry. And so I've also been happier than I've ever been these last 3 years. And I assume that'll continue. So I'm gonna jump ahead over that journey, because this is a really sweet morning for me to be talking to you. One of the things I've learned to do through Citizens Climate Lobby is to speak to my members of Congress, to speak to their aides, and to build relationships with newspaper editors. That's gone pretty well with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but it was really lagging with the Wisconsin State Journal. They were being a tough nut to crack. I've had 14 months of polite emails that didn't seem to go anywhere. And so I got a new idea in December. Every year they come out with an editorial agenda at the beginning of the year where they announce their priorities for the community. And I was like, I want climate change to be on their agenda. That's what I want. Okay, how am I going to do that? Because just me emailing Scott Milford isn't going to do it at this point. So I decided I would try to gather up some of the allies I'd met along the way into a team and propose that we meet as a team. So I got Kathleen Falk to go with me. I got a Nobel Prize winning scientist from the UW, Jonathan Patz, who brought along another very distinguished scientist, John Magnuson. Jonathan Patz had been on the IPCC and actually when they won the Nobel Prize with Al Gore, so very distinguished. I brought a farmer, Jim Goodman. I brought a small businessman, Sam Bradenbach from TDS Custom Construction. And I brought Peter Bakken of the Wisconsin Interfaith Power and Light. So we had this team and they could not say no to us. So we got our meeting last week on Monday. So I'm gonna kind of bring you into that meeting now. Well, first of all, I teach 4-year-olds. I'm used to working with women and little kids, right? And in the wee hours of the morning before the meeting, I'm like, oh my gosh, how many men are there? Okay, so there's 7 men, 2 women. That's okay, I can do this. So we get there, and Kathleen Falk shoots me this look like, get going, Madeline, so I do. And I laid out a presentation for them that I'm going to show you just a little bit, and then each one of them took a turn talking about what the impacts of climate change were. And we had the publisher and the editor-in-chief and the opinion page editor, so we had the important people there. So here's where I started. You can go to the next one. I showed them their own front page from July 13th. And I told them that when I saw this, that I cried, but that's how powerful they are, that their journalism moves people. And that was like my fear of what was happening with the drought in the summer and my fear for the future, and that I didn't want to see any more pictures like that in the newspaper in the future. It just breaks my heart to look at this man and his dead cornfield. That's Wisconsin. And I told them that I took that to Congress. I wanted them to know that they have an impact. So that's where I started with them. And then I went through 3 steps that I learned from Anthony Lazarowitz of the Yale Project on Climate Change Communication. And he's got a great interview with Bill Moyers that you could Google and find. It's awesome. So let's go to the next slide. The next thing I wanted to make sure they knew was that there's a scientific consensus about this. And I know you guys get this stuff, but you might find this helpful when you're talking to people, to other people who don't get it. almost 14,000 peer-reviewed climate articles in the last 20 years. How many are questioning or rejecting global warming? 24. You don't find consensus like that in science, hardly anywhere. And Anthony Lazarowitz says, if you can get people to understand this point, that's a gateway belief. If people get it, that there's really not doubt among the scientists, there's really not doubt that it's happening, they will open their minds further to the rest of it. So I started there. Okay, let's go to the next one. Then I showed them this, because the next piece is that, first is, there's scientific consensus, there's not doubt. The second is, it's happening, it's real, and humans are causing it. So I'm just going to briefly tell you what this is. This is 800,000 years of CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere in parts per million. More CO2, it's warmer. Less CO2, it's colder because of the greenhouse effect. So the red line goes up and down here. You can see that down here. And when it's down low, you're talking an ice age. When it comes up, it's nice and pleasant. Our civilization evolved when we got up here. Nice and pleasant, good conditions for life. And it did that for like more than 800,000 years. That's normal, below 300 parts per million. That's normal for Earth. The Industrial Revolution came, and we started going from here, and this is where we are today. Just stopping here, that's 100 parts per million more than normal. But then what I showed them, and at this point, you could have heard a pin drop in that room. I was like, this is where the IPCC says we're going. This is the level of politicians and the negotiators and scientists to some extent, right here in the middle at 450, that they say, said yes, and then we went on. Okay, so take breath there. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Then the next point is that it's not far off in the future, it's happening now. This is the cover that Business Week magazine put out after Hurricane Sandy demolished New York City and New Jersey. Paraphrasing Bill Clinton, you can't see this picture real well, but it's not far off, it's not distant, it's now. And then we went around and talked about the things that were happening. Let's go on the next one. Okay. Yeah, I'll show it to you this way. This is today's paper. Ta-da! 6 big goals for the new year. Right up here, lower carbon emissions. We got them. So, that's my good news. That's my good news. And why do I think that's really significant? Because we need Congress to act to turn this around. The things that you're doing already, the things we do state and locally, those are important. But to move things on the scale that we need to move to rapidly change what we're doing, we've got to get Congress to move. And those people up at the front that you saw at the beginning, the Citizens Climate Lobby people, we were there last summer lobbying in D.C. We work as a team. So what I just did here, they're doing. And our goal is to get all the newspapers of the country online so that they're all saying to Congress, you got to act, and you got to enact a carbon tax is the next piece of that. And they are making progress. So I'm not alone doing this. I'm part of this huge team. And that's a really, we have to have hope in this. We have to keep working at it, and we can. I'm amazed by people. People can be so incredibly wonderful. They can convert to their best selves at surprising moments. They can also be the opposite, but I keep working.
the Citizens Climate Lobby to pull the first out. So this is part of the campaign. And the members of Congress, they tell us, they look at the opinion page probably first to see what's there. It doesn't matter that newspapers are going out of business and nobody in the community hardly is reading them. Your Congress people are looking here. So when you write a letter to the editor, that's who sees it. We've written, nationally 600 letters to the editor, all of them saying, gotta do something on climate change, gotta enact a carbon tax. 60 of those came out of Wisconsin. That's what we do. I just had to share that with you. Because that's, I was like up at 5 a.m. going, okay, what's in the paper? Okay, so I'll tell you just a little teeny bit, because I'm guessing I should stop talking soon and let you talk to me or ask questions. You have time? Good, okay. What is the solution that we want Congress to do? This carbon tax, what is that? It's based on economics. The idea that what you want less of, you have to make more expensive. And then it doesn't matter what you believe, because we do react economically to things. So you take my sister, who is not so sure about global warming and loves her SUV, but she doesn't drive it anymore now that she can drive my mother's Saturn, because my mother lives with her now, because it costs too much, you know? And with cigarettes, when we made them more expensive through taxes, people stopped smoking. That's really one of the main drivers of the shift in smoking, is the cost of cigarettes. So the idea is that if we want less carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we need to make it more expensive when it's emitted. There's a fancy way of saying that, that right now the costs of fossil fuels, a great many of them are externalized. That is, they're not built into the price that we pay at the pump or at the meter. We pay it somewhere else. We pay it in our health insurance premiums and in our taxes to cover the wars that we fight to keep getting the oil. We pay for the health effects of that. We pay for the environmental destruction. The oil companies don't pay for that environmental destruction. We pay for it personally when it happens to us personally, or our government pays for it. Our government just is allocating $60 billion. Hopefully, they're going to actually do that for recovery from Hurricane Sandy. That's damaging to our economy. But it's not built into the price of the fossil fuels. If it was, we wouldn't be using them as much. So that's the idea, is that you put a fee on, or a tax, I like to call it fee because tax is not a good word. You put a fee on CO2 that's emitted by fossil fuels, and you put it on at the source. So when the fossil fuel company takes it out of the ground, the coal company, the oil company, the Canadians up in the tar sands, or when you import it into the border, if there's not already a tax on it from the country that produced it, then they pay the tax. So Canada doesn't put its own carbon fee on it, and they're shipping Keystone tar sands oil into here, then they'll pay it to us when they bring it in. That will raise prices. And the idea is to do it slowly and gradually. That you start low and then you build up, but you do it on a predictable schedule of $10 per ton of CO2 emitted. That has like a 10 cent a gallon impact at the pump and about 1.2 cents per kilowatt hour. But the next year it's 20, the next year it's 30, the next year it's 40. By the time it's 50 or 60, people are really getting used to the idea that, oh, those, I know those prices are going up, I'm going to buy a different car. The free market will respond to that. This is how we sell it to conservatives. The government isn't saying creating a regulation or a rule, but people will respond to that change in price. There's a second part of that, and I'm not going to go through the slide, I think, at this point. There's a second part that the dividend, this proposal is called carbon fee and dividend. So besides the fee, the government's collected all this money from the fee. What are they going to do with it? a lot of discussion about that. Our proposal that comes via James Hansen and many economists is rebate it back to people. Right, that's the dividend, or rebate check. Take the whole amount of money, that whole pot that they raised, divide it by everybody in the country, and send the same rebate check back. What that will do is cushion the effect of rising prices for the poorest and moderate income people. If you're a poor person, you can't afford to spend as much on mansions and big houses and goods that use lots of fossil fuels. And your rebate check will be larger, actually, than your increase in prices. And that rebate check will go up every year as the fee goes up. If you're a big user, if you're a wealthy person, yeah, your rebate check is going to cover your use, and you might change. If you're a business, businesses will experience rising costs. They will pass that on. Businesses that figure out how to lower their carbon footprint will be able to outcompete businesses that don't do that. They'll have lower prices. So businesses will be motivated to also cut their energy use. And then new businesses will come into existence to meet that demand. Because we're all going to be looking around going, I think I will insulate my windows. Who can supply me with that? Who can tell me how to lower my carbon footprint? And we will build a green economy that way. And let's go a couple slides down here. Next one. There's bipartisan support for this, but I'm not going to let you read that. Next one. This one I want you to see. Because this is the tough thing, is getting Republicans, getting conservatives on this. And this proposal is crafted to appeal to them because it's free market based, it's revenue neutral. All the money coming in goes out again, so government didn't get any bigger. And these are the economic advisors to every president that has supported this idea of a carbon tax. Republican and Democrat. So we think we can sell this in Congress, but it's not an easy sell. But that same approach that I used with the editors of the Journal Sentinel, we are using one by one with energy and environment aides in Congress, and then as they open the door to us, with people, with the senators and representatives themselves. It's not big visible work, but it's happening. And my last little bit, you can support this. You can join Citizens Climate Lobby. Would later today, like when we're doing this soup thing, I would love if you would write a letter to Mark Pocan and Tammy Baldwin. You can also write Ron Johnson, he needs to hear that. But both of them, Pocan and Baldwin, are both new in their position, and it's a good time to say to them, we want you to lead on this. We know you'll support it, but we want you to make this a priority and get in Congress and lead on it. And if you would send that message to them, I would greatly appreciate it, because when I go and talk to them, it helps if they've gotten 50, 100, or 150 letters that say that. We have a monthly letter writing program called the Letter Brigade set up, and there's a handout for that and other handouts out in the hall that Peter put. And so if you are a letter writer and could write monthly, we will help you know what to write about. But basically, all we want is the same message. Climate change is important. You got to do something. Support carbon fee and dividend. You write that every month, it will help. We'll just give you a different excuse to write it every month. This time, you know, hottest year ever recorded. Next month, big storm. Next month, you know, whatever. We'll give you an excuse to write that letter. So that's where I'll stop. I guess the last thing I just want to say is that we're, as I was saying, how wonderful human beings are. There are tipping points, not just for the planet, not where, you know, we can lose control of our CO2 and of climate, of global warming, but there are political tipping points. And I think we're on the edge of one. I think that people are waking up to this, and that this is more than ever the time to make climate change and political action on that a priority. I think we can do that. And I think we can do it sense of connection with the earth, with nature. We evolved as part of this amazing system, and that's what keeps me going, is that connection to the beautiful places, Lake Windrup, of just our community. Thank you.
At this time, Madeline will be sharing his closing words.
These are from Dr. James Hansen, one of my heroes. What do I know, a reticent Midwestern scientist, that would cause me to get arrested protesting in front of the White House? And what would you do if you know what I know from a TED Talk?
Thank you for coming. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you and join us for coffee, conversation, and soup. And letter writing.